Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following is a presentation of the Belly Up Sports Media Network.
This is the main event.
This is your main event, Mark's Podcast. I'm your first host, lifelong wrestling fan, former radio guy, cat dad, and the man who will never forget the Alamo. I am Troy. And with me, as always, is the main event collector and figure-hunting warrior. He's the WWE Walking Wrestling Encyclopedia and the Farouk to my Ahmed Johnson. You're going down! It's Greg. What's up, Greg?
Damn. I will never forget the Alamo. I will be at the Alamo in like 8 days as of recording this. No, 7 days.
Yeah. Well, as of the posting of this, I can't calendar, bro. So let me see. This is posting just days before you'll be at the Alamo Dome. So there you go. I'm definitely looking forward to it. Going to go to a buddy's house and watch it. So I'm not just... Well, it's better than being a lonely a-hole sitting in my room just watching it with headphones on, I guess. I don't know. You're going to be off having fun.
You watch with watching headphones it live. On?
Say what?
You watch it with headphones on?
Yeah, most of the time. I watch it on my laptop and got the headphones in so I can actually hear the damn thing. But because there's always crap going on, you know, somebody's watching something on TV around here. So, but either way, this one, we're going back in time. I can't math, bro. So how many years is this? 23, 4, 5, 6, 26 years in the past to... I don't know. I like this Rumble. You said you like this Rumble. It got some not so great ratings. So I think we're in the minority of thinking this is a great Rumble. I don't know. But there was a lot going on in 1997. 1997 was a big year, I think, in all of wrestling. ECW had
WCW's best year ever.
Yeah, it was historic. WWF had some cool stuff going on. Isn't this the year that ECW had their first pay-per-view?
Yeah, April, I believe.
Yeah, so big stuff went on this year, and this was just the kickoff of it all. I don't know, man. I don't know why this Rumble gets the hate it does. I mean, not all matches are classics or anything, but I don't know. I thought the Rumble match itself was interesting.
Don't tell Russo, because he'll feel like he's vindicated. Nobody cares about Mexicans, bro.
Good Lord.
Did he say that?
Yeah, well, you see, what are they, Lucha Libras? Well, you want your Lucha Libras, go down to Mexico, bro.
Well, there was a lot of them on the show.
Yeah, I know. I think that was a...
Nobody wants Mexicans, bro. They want stuff on a pole, bro. Real logic.
Right. I think this was heavily pushed, the Lucha Libres, at least. I think that was heavily pushed by, like, Bruce Pritchard. I know he's got a fondness for Lucha and all that.
Oh, he's from Texas. It's a big thing in Texas, so.
Right. And
yeah, no, that's not a stereotype thing. Don't come at me. It's a real thing. Look it up.
Oh, well, of course. Yeah, I mean, and it's on the border of Mexico, so, you know, I mean, it just makes sense. And he used to watch a lot of
Houston
wrestling.
Big in San Diego, too. Oh!
I know. That blows my mind. But... Yeah, so he used to watch the Luchas come into Houston, and then obviously the Guerreros, who are Mexican by descent, are, you know, they were big
Mexican
in Texas.
Royalty.
Exactly. So he knew a lot of that, and he knew these you know, the people running the companies in Mexico, and he speaks fluent Spanish. So I know it was heavily pushed by him. He liked the idea, but it just, I don't know if it really translated to the WWF audience, unfortunately. And there's something, like, I don't know about you, but there's something in the match, the Lucha Libre match we'll get to, that Vince was throwing me off bad. He was having me second guess myself. I'm like, wait a minute, is he wrong or am I wrong? What's going on? I think he was wrong, but we'll get to it.
Damn it, pal, you're wrong.
Yeah, I just, oh God, we'll get to it. It's like the Dusty Rhodes thing where Dave Meltzer had criticized Dusty Rhodes' commentary because he always talked about whenever the Luchas were out there, Dusty Rhodes never mentioned one of them by name, and he just talked about anything but the match going on. At least Vince talked about the match, but there was something I'm like, I think he's wrong here, but we'll get to it. Either way, before we get into our first break, though, time out here real quick to let you know that the Main Event Marks is sponsored by Swift Lifestyles. They are clean energy drinks and focus enhancers, great tasting vitamins, and big brain nootropics that are made and shipped from the USA. Go to SwiftLifestyles.com and use our special promo code Main Event Marks, all one word, to get 15% off your order. It's Main Event Marks, all one word, to get 15% off your order at checkout. Now we're going to take our first break. On the other end of this, diving into the news and notes, and there's plenty of it for January of 1997, right after this. Follow the Main Event Marks at facebook.com/MainEventMarksPod, on Twitter at @MainEvent_Marks, and on Instagram at @MainEvent_Marks and at @MainEventCollector.
Get ready to rumble! In your new Main Event Marks merchandise, we've got t-shirts, hoodies, masks, hats, stickers, pins, and much more on our Redbubble store. That's maineventmarks.redbubble.com. You can also pick up some awesome clothing items with the latest updated show graphics on our Bonfire store. That's bonfire.com/store/MainEventMarks. Support your favorite retro wrestling podcast and pick up some cool swag on our Bonfire and Redbubble stores. That's maineventmarks.redbubble.com and bonfire.com/store/MainEventMarks.
Hey gang, it's Commissioner Cooper of TSS Fantasy. We are the fantasy show of the people. Expert fantasy advice, free contests, leading expert medical and legal analysis, and most importantly, you. Interact with us on all social media platforms or check us out at tssfantasy.com. You can hear us on Spotify, Apple and Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, and many more. Check out the fun today and be a part of the most interactive fantasy show around, TSS Fantasy, the fantasy show of the people.
The Main Event Marks are available wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. Find all of our links on our link tree at linktr.ee/MainEventMarks.
And we're back.
We're back.
Real quick, we want to let you know that the Main Event Marks is sponsored by Shocked Energy. Shocked Energy is a healthier alternative to traditional energy drinks that gives the energy that gamers need while in a long session without skimping on their health. Their products come in a powder form and you mix them into water. You can either choose from green apple or watermelon. You can also try both if you get their sample kit. Use our special link that is down in the podcast description, or you can simply go to shockedenergy.com at checkout. Use the promo code MAINEVENT, all one word, to save 10% on your order. That's promo code MAINEVENT, and you're going to save 10% at checkout. Do you like your coffee like you like your podcasts? Gimmick and politics free? Well, so do we here at the Main Event Marks, and so do the guys and gals at Coffee Brand Coffee, where they ditch the gimmicks. You see, when you buy your coffee from other roasters, chances are that they've been sitting on the shelf for heaven knows how long. Don't rob yourself of freshness. At Coffee Brand Coffee, they roast to order, ensuring that you get the freshest coffee possible. And as Greg will tell you, that's what counts. Coffee Brand Coffee offers bagged coffee as well as K-cups. And for the non-coffee people, they offer a variety of teas and cocos. Just click on the link down in the podcast description or go to coffeebrandcoffee.com and use our promo code MAINEVENT, all one word, at checkout to get 5% off your order. That's coffeebrandcoffee.com and use the promo code MAINEVENT to save 5% at checkout. News and notes time.
Oh, I don't have anything to crack today. I'm just drinking bottled water.
Oh, yeah.
Two weeks in a row.
Well, earlier I was drinking coffee not too long ago, so And I was drinking, hey, everybody, I was drinking it out of a Main Event Marks mug. So,
oh, I am eating Wingstop. Can we get them to sponsor us?
Yes, please. or, hey, a local place, sort of, or at least I think it's more of an Ohio place. I don't see it around anywhere else, but it's called Roosters. I usually get chicken wings from there every time I watch pay-per-view with my buddy that I'm going to see the Royal Rumble with. So, hey, you guys can sponsor us, and I'll gladly eat your wings all day long and talk about how awesome they are. And they give you, like, big-ass juicy ones, not like the little ones where you're
Oh, yeah?
God. But you ever get those chicken wings where you're like, oh, that's like a bite?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, these ones, like, it's damn near a whole leg. It's like, holy cow. Or, you know, chicken.
Do you remember that place we went to when I landed in Columbus? That barbecue place?
Yep. Oh, yeah, City Barbecue. Yeah, you guys can sponsor us, too. They just put one that in not too
flipping
far.
Flipping amazing.
Oh, yeah. My dad, they used to only have it in Columbus. My dad would bring it home when he would go on business trips to Columbus. I always knew he was bringing home City Barbecue, so I'd be waiting on him. But either way, I guess we've done enough pandering to local restaurants. But first up here, well, I gotta queue it up early this week because it's actually the top couple of stories we got. This week in ECW. If I may have another volley.
If I may, sir.
Rick Rude made a surprise appearance in ECW last week. Rude wore a mask.
This backstage. Is how you know he's hurting for money.
Yeah, right. Rude wore a mask backstage the entire time to try to disguise who he was, but of course, everyone figured it out. Was it the same mask he wore as the Halloween... the Halloween Havoc Phantom?
Phantom, yeah.
Yeah, because we can't tell by the rippling muscles and that big effing stash.
Well, it was either him or Tom Selleck.
Exactly. But then when he came,
I dream
to
of having a stash like that.
Oh yeah, that's it's iconic.
That came out wrong on my face. That came out wrong too.
Oh man, when he shaved it off, it was like, what the hell, man? Like, ew, put it back. Anyway, then when he came to the ring, the fans
that's
had
like,
it figured.
When Cardona gets mad at Karrion Kross for shaving his head, you got all that nice hair you shave off. You're such a piece of crap. Oh, dude, you do that.
He looks like a completely different person. I didn't recognize him when he grew his hair because I only knew him as Baldy. I was like, oh, okay. Shaved the goatee, grew the hair. Like,
you know, it was weird for me. Yes, where you say that about Rick Rude, he looked weird without the mustache. To me, he looked weird with the full beard when he was in DX. That's what looked weird to me.
Wait, who was it?
When Rick Rude had the full beard in DX?
Oh, yeah.
See, to me, that's what looked weird. I was able to get past the non-mustache.
Yeah, it was weird. And then when he went from WWF and hopped over to WCW, didn't he shave the beard and just have the stash again? I can't remember.
Yeah, that was the whole thing. He was on Raw with a full beard. He was on Nitro with just a stash. Yeah, that was part of the whole thing.
Yeah, it's funny. Yeah. But anyway, but either way, when he came to the ring, fans figured it out as well. Rude never ended up taking the mask off. It ended up
Ravishing Rick, the worst kept secret in wrestling history, apparently.
Yeah, right. It ended up leading to the return of Pitbull number one, who had been out of action for several months after legitimately suffering a broken neck from Shane Douglas DDT. Rick Rude has been rumored to be heading to the WWF when his Lloyd's of London disability insurance policy runs out, with many saying that...
Bigger story on that.
Right. With many saying that he'd be heading there in late spring. But WWF officials have denied the rumors, and those close to Rude... give it a little bit. And those close to Rude insist that he will never wrestle again after suffering a back injury in a 1994 match with Sting in Japan.
Funny, I watched that the other day, and I just realized, too, why was the ring set up the way it was set up? That's why he got hurt, because of the stupid-ass setup.
It's always set up that way in Japan. Do you remember?
I don't remember that.
Well, when we watched Wrestle Kingdom 8, remember we were talking about when Bad Luck Fale got put through the table and he like fell off that platform.
That now. I didn't realize it was the same thing until just now.
Yeah.
But it's let me retract. Let me restate it. Why was WCW's ring set up like that?
I think they had, it might just, if they were in the dome, the Tokyo Dome, that is, God dang it, pronouns, pal. But if they were in the Tokyo Dome, maybe that's just how it has to be set up.
So or, people can see, like WrestleMania 3?
It maybe, or if it, a lot of those arenas are set up like sumo halls, so I think it's just naturally on a platform. I could.
Why would you want to have sumo wrestling on a platform? That makes no sense to me.
I don't know.
So you want 500-600-700 pound guys falling off that?
Right. Yeah. Like I said, I have no clue. That's just my best
guess. I'm sure there's a reason. I'm sure we're going to get told this. I know we will.
Actually, God, same people that downvoted my Dave Meltzer wants you to die video.
I upvoted it. So
yeah, there you go.
I don't know why the hell
bumping it up.
Yeah, it makes no sense, but
right.
But message well, doesn't anyways.
Well, for those saying that Rick Rude will never wrestle again, I have to say
that is correct.
Unfortunately,
my knowledge, he never even took another bump.
No,
I could be wrong on that, but I said to my knowledge, but I never. Right. I don't think I've seen it.
Well, and that was a big thing when he went to WCW. Was I guess that's why. Well, I'll get into the second part later, but he wanted WCW to pay off whatever he owed. On his insurance policy, whatever.
Yeah, Bischoff confirmed this, right?
Yeah. And that was so he could wrestle again. And they said, yeah, we're not going to do that because, I mean, we're not going to make enough money off of you to justify that and whatever. And Rude got mad and he blamed Bischoff. And by extension, his family blamed Bischoff. So when Eric Bischoff went to Rick Rude's funeral to pay respects, they went off, like, I guess his wife went off on him and kicked him out of the funeral. So, yeah, I know. It's like, that's effed up. Like, because he wouldn't pay a crap ton of money so that your husband could wrestle again. Like,
that's also, I wouldn't do that unless Bischoff was directly responsible for his death.
Right.
Why would you do that?
He's showing up to try to pay respects. Like, good grief.
According to the Honky Tonk Man, he died via his own hand, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. After he injected steroids into his dong and it got black and fell off and he got so depressed he killed himself. Like, oh God.
Real story, folks.
Why does every like honky tonk man said this about somebody story? It's always about somebody's dong.
We've been over this. I'm pretty sure we did before. And I said, that's exactly what Honky Tonk Man does. He doesn't like you. He's going straight for your dick.
Goes right for the package.
I remember when he got mad at Bret Hart, he said he couldn't get his thing hard. Because Goldberg kicked him.
Yeah, kicked so hard he can't get his wang hard. And we're like, good God, man. It's always about dick with him.
I feel like I vividly remember us talking about this before.
Yeah, we had, there's actually a clip in on our YouTube. If anybody goes, I think it's something about Honky Tonk Man loves, you know, whatever. go look it up. I personally know I make the thumbnails, so I'm kind of biased here, but
I don't know why the hell
I LOL'd.
I don't understand though, like why is that a thing? I don't like you, so I'm gonna talk about your penis.
It makes you wonder if you know he's hiding something. Just saying. I mean, I you know
what we got here, a tiny wanger. I just watched the Bulls bar the other day. That was Stan Hansen talking to the little lackeys. It was literally nice. Stan Hansen. What we got here? A tiny wanger.
Good Lord. Yeah, that, God, something. But anyway, to finish this up, though, Rude claimed his injuries were career-ending in a lawsuit he filed against WCW. Paul Heyman has said that the masked wrestler won't ever wrestle in ECW, but we'll continue to make thus appearances.
Thus negating the whole name, the masked wrestler. Yeah.
Right. But he will continue to make appearances leading up to the first ECW pay-per-view in April. He eventually takes the damn mask off, because I remember there's a famous clip. It's effed
up. Can you like make out with Francine or something and take it off or something like that?
Maybe. The clip I've seen that you'd never get away with anything like this now, he picks up Francine in like a powerbomb position and like...
Oh God, I can already picture it.
And he like carries her off like that. And she's like struggling to get away while he's carrying her away like that. And it's like, God.
What ECW is that?
Yeah, right. Oddly enough, Rick Rude's character fit right in.
Not even Tony Khan does this crap, I want to point out.
Nope. I don't think TK was a fan of ECW. Maybe he was. I don't know. But
no, he's clearly a fan of Nitro.
No, Greg. He's nothing. Dynamite's nothing like Nitro. He's not modeling after Nitro. No. Yeah, right. So ECW is scrambling to get all the legal and insurance red tape done for their pay per view to air on April 13th. That's a 90-day deadline before the show where the promotion is required to have all the necessary insurance and legal stuff done and absolve a request TV in case anything unexpected happens, which, I mean, you know, good
call. Yeah, that's kind of crazy to me what you just said there about that. As you look at the years build going up to 97, WWE and WCW are throwing new pay-per-views every other month, a new pay-per-view is popping up. So they're just putting out pay-per-views, and they're struggling to put out one over here. What does that tell you?
Yep. Well, it's because of this, the legal wranglings and stuff, which, I mean, if I was Request TV, I think that's smart. I'd do the same thing after seeing their product. It's like, look,
I'm going to use a Dana White-ism here. They have hardcore porn on pay-per-view. And wrestling, he used to say this about UFC when they couldn't get on pay-per-view. You couldn't get this on there because there's fighting, but you could see people doing that stuff on pay-per-view. Like, why is that okay, but the violence is not?
Well,
you're kind of with them on that. I don't get the logic there.
It might be the particular pay-per-view provider. I don't know if they're showing it. I mean, they might be. I don't know what Request TV shows or showed. I don't know if they're.
It says anything about TCI. I know that's now what Comcast is, I believe.
Oh, okay. But yeah, I mean. With some of the stuff that happened in ECW, yeah, I'd probably want extra insurance too, you know, just in case. You know, Request TV cannot be sued for anything that may or may not happen at that show. But they have to get the paperwork done in time in order in order to guarantee the April 13th date. If ECW can't get it done in time, the pay-per-view would likely be pushed back to June because Request doesn't want to add another pay-per-view in May because they already have several major events scheduled for that month, boxing, WWF, WCW, and UFC.
Yeah, May's a big month for boxing. Cinco de Mayo.
Right, yeah, I know Canelo, right? Or is it Canelo that fights?
Canelo does usually May and September. Used to be, I believe it used to be Mayweather's months.
Oh, okay.
But, you know, Cinco de Mayo, Mexican Independence, of course, Canelo's on there.
Right. Also here, ECW is doing an angle with Terry Funk where he's back, saying that it's his last chance to be a world champion.
I'm sure it is.
Yeah. The angle is expected to be one of the top matches at the ECW pay-per-view.
And it was.
Was it? Okay.
I think he defends against Stevie Richards and Raven, is it?
Oh, God. I don't even remember. Was it Barely Legal?
Yeah, Barely Legal was the first one.
Okay. It was the one and only Barely Legal, I guess. I
thought that was the name of R. Kelly's pay-per-view.
Here we go. Terry Funk defeated the Sandman and Stevie Richards in a three-way dance to become the world champion.
Oh, it was the Sandman. Okay. I thought it was Raven for some reason.
Well, you're also right, because directly after that match, he faced Raven for some reason in a one-on-one match. So
I don't remember the specifics of it, but I remember that.
Terry Funk did, he wrestled for the title and then defended the title in the same night. I just, like, why? Even looking back, like, I remember when I first saw that, I was like, dumb. Whatever. But either way, this is funny. I didn't know this was a thing. Blue World Order merch now accounts
for
now accounts for over 40% of total ECW merchandise sales, and ECW already does huge merch sales to begin with. First of all, define huge. Second of all, what?
Anybody else sees a red flag in this? The highest selling merch is a parody of something that's hot.
Right. Well,
should that be a red flag?
I'm kind of curious now to see how well the LWO merchandise sold back in the day. I'm sure there were some people that bought it just because they were Hispanic. Like, there had to be that group of people.
I wasn't going to say it, but since you brought that up, there one time there was this group of people that lived near me, like a whole family, like it was like 10 people. They were all wearing LWO shirts walking down the street.
Mother of God. Nice.
Not joking.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Also, not forget, that group was not long-lived. It was a very short-lived group.
Right.
I want to say for like less than a month, maybe.
Well, I'll say this. I have never seen one of those shirts out in the wild. So, I mean, that's just an anecdote. Doesn't mean it didn't sell. I personally have never seen one.
In this podcast, TJ tells you the Mexican people don't live in Ohio.
they live in certain areas of Ohio, but just no, they're not a huge demographic.
Hell, growing up, they lived in the room next to me. My pops.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. So you had a large demographic in your area.
I called them family.
Yeah, right.
How you doing?
Wrong. No, Greg, it's familia. Get it right. Anyway, God. Moving on here. I'm going to end up pissing some people off. Well, actually, but speaking of LWO, getting into WCW here, yet again, WCW Nitro set records this week. The episode from New Orleans was the first Nitro episode to draw more than 10,000 people.
Was this the one where DDP didn't join the NWO and give the diamond cutter to Hall?
Yeah.
Because you said New Orleans, right? I think it happened there.
Right. Well, they drew more than... It was the first to draw more than 10,000 people and the first show to do more than $100,000. It was the Nitro before this Rumble, so... They did more than $100,000 gate in New Orleans. It was the first show to do that since Bill Watts' Mid-South Wrestling in the 80s. Next week's show in Chicago has already topped both of those numbers in advanced sales. Not shocked. The biggest pop of the show came when Scott Hall and Kevin Nash tried to welcome Diamond Dallas Page to the NWO, only for Page to hit Hall with a diamond cutter and throw Nash out of the ring.
That was a pretty significant moment. That's like, people talk about big moments in wrestling. That was a huge one that no one talks about.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And that's one of the things.
He's like the first person to turn down the NWO. He was like the first person to really stick it to him and get one over on him. And he was like that was his face turn that turned him into the legend that he is.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there's a lot going on in that moment people don't talk about.
It was definitely historic. It was a historic moment. And like I said, historic numbers for Nitro because it was the first Nitro episode to have more than 10,000 people there. It was the first show in New Orleans to do more than $100,000 gate since Bill Watts with Mid-South. I mean, a lot of big stuff there.
Look at this card, dude. Chavo Guerrero versus Mr. JL. There you go.
Oh, Simon. F, yeah.
Dude, Jim Duggan versus Super Callow. Well, I mean,
that alone was drawing the house.
Jericho versus Craig Pittman. Harlem Heat versus High Voltage. DDP versus who the hell is Mark Starr?
If you threw names into a randomizer and it made a card, you couldn't get this damn card. Who the hell books Jim Duggan against Super Callow?
Well, hold on, it gets better, dude, because later on, for some reason, Super Callow is wrestling Conan. So wrestles twice.
Why?
Hell yeah.
Okay, so that disproves my theory. Because remember that one week I asked you, or I told you, I said, hey, I've never seen Super Callow and Conan in the same place at the same time. Well, there you go.
Look at this
Super
one.
Callow sucked.
This one might have been good. Dean Malenko versus Eddie Guerrero, that might have been good.
Yeah.
As a quick note, it's the longest match in the card, 12 minutes.
Well, how about that?
Jeff Jarrett versus Chris Benoit. Scotty Riggs versus Kidman.
I wonder if that's now that you
dude, Lex
it, you
Luger
said...
versus Rick Effin Fuller, dude. Hell yeah.
Oh God.
Dude, I'm so, gonna turn, we're gonna stop recording right now. I'm gonna turn this on Peacock and watch it.
Hell yeah. you said Super Callow faced Conan, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so
and lost.
I'm wondering. Go figure. I'm wondering if that's that quote unquote. Well, I should say infamous match that they have like a million gifs of, where like Super Callow kept like missing his cues and effing up throughout the entire match, and it's like. You just see a million botch gifs of that match. It's like they try to close, or I think Conan tried to clothesline him, whatever, and they end up like colliding in the middle of the ring, and Conan just kind of like flops like a soccer player. I don't know.
And the main event, the semi-main event was Rick Steiner versus Arn Anderson, and the Giant versus Hulk Hogan with Ted DiBiase. That sounds so weird. Hogan with Ted DiBiase.
Right. Well, that's actually my next story here. Here's another reason why this show is famous. Also on Nitro, they tried a weird gimmick that at the end of the show where the main event, Hollywood Hogan versus the Giant, started with only 1 minute left in the show. The reason was because they were trying to build up ratings for the new Robin Hood show that was airing right after.
Halloween Havoc of them.
Right. Well, they promised to come back and show the match during commercial breaks of Robin Hood, and that's pretty much what they did, airing about 30 seconds of the match during each commercial break for the entire hour of the show. The problem is, the match only lasted about 4 minutes in total. So as they stretched it out during the commercials, they acted like it was going on live and that everyone watching was missing a classic 45-minute Hogan Giant match that had been going on all through the show.
Look, I love Hulk Hogan. I would never call anything he did was a classic.
Yeah, well...
It's like my all-time favorite wrestler, but he never had a classic.
Well, I know you don't like real long matches anyway, and I mean, I do, depending on who's in it. But when I hear 45-minute classic, the names... The Giant and Hulk Hogan don't come to mind.
Yeah, oh, man.
I don't think either one of them has that stamina.
You already see him sucking wind by halfway through.
Yeah, right. Half. Wow, you're being generous.
This is just bringing something. I just have a flashback when it was like months ago when Hangman Page returned. He won the ladder match to get the world title shot. It was like last year, I think. They did something similar. Stay tuned to Rose to the Top. During the commercial break, we're going to interview Hangman on about his win right here. So this might what be a turn thing to be fair. So now it might not be WCW.
What
I don't know.
Do
it might be
Basil.
It might be a Turner thing. So I just want to say.
Well, wrap it up.
I'm not trying to exonerate anybody. I'm just saying. No, since this happened twice on the same channel or same family of networks.
Well, and they're artificially, I'm sure they're artificially boosting the ratings for this show anyway. And the thing is, it's stupid because what happens in week two? I guess you're hoping that they'll watch enough of the show and get hooked so they come back, but most likely not. You're going to have a huge drop off in week two.
Can you imagine, like, if you like stay tuned to Robin Hood and see what happens in the match? People are just waiting to watch the match, and then the next week, and it looks like the ratings are huge. Next week, no one watches at all.
Yeah, right.
I'm going to give. It's going to get Bischoff like kind of a stiffy. Oh, people care more about wrestling than they do the Super Robin Hood show. We had to carry it. At least that's what I would say if it was me.
Right.
That's what it would be saying to me.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's absolutely true. No, that's absolutely true. But I mean, I guess, like I said, their hopes are most likely that you'll keep, you know, you'll watch enough of the Robin Hood show and get hooked to it. So you'll come back. But,
I didn't even like the Robin Hood Disney movie. I wasn't going to watch this.
I liked Robin Hood Men in Tights with Cary Elwes, but about it. That,
what the hell is that?
Never saw. It was like a comedic version of Robin Hood.
I heard Men in Tights. Are we talking about Robin Hood or wrestling still?
God. Yes. But either way, there was a lot of complaints about the sleazy attempt to spike ratings for Robin Hood at the expense of wrestling fans.
Sleazy? They weren't showing naked chicks or anything, were they? How was it sleazy?
Yeah, it's like, okay, well, who the hell was tuning in? Like, you're like, oh, man, I have to sit through this show because I just have to see what happens with Hulk Hogan and the Giant.
This was building to one of their worst pay-per-views in the history of that company.
Yeah. God.
The same exact main event, by the way. Would they just redo the main event?
I guess so.
Pretty sure sold out 97 was Hogan and the Giant.
Yeah. God. Dumb.
What was the point of this? They're just going to redo the match on pay-per-view. My head hurts.
Yeah. I've seen a lot of companies do that. I'm like, quit ruining your pay-per-view main event, man. Gosh. Speaking of Hogan, though, I remember hearing about this. I was like, oh, God, it was around this time. Scott Hall had a tooth knocked out, two teeth loosened, a black eye, and possibly a broken eardrum from the incident where Jerry Sags of the Nasty Boys stiffed him during a match. Some in the company say that Hall had it coming and that the Nasties are good friends with Hogan, so they're safe. Others say that Sags should be fired. After the match backstage, Kevin Nash confronted the Nasties with a baseball bat, and it ended up just being a bunch of words being thrown. Eric Bischoff reportedly wanted to fire Sags, but Scott Hall felt that Hogan would retaliate against he and Nash if they got his friend fired. I can't remember exactly what it was.
Look, I don't know any of them, obviously, but if I'm going to be friends with anybody, it's not going to be the Nasty Boys over the Outsiders. I'm sorry.
Yeah, right. Yeah, because, well, the Nasty Boys are clearly drawing the money. But I will say...
Also, having met Nash before, I can tell you he's like the coolest MF-er on the planet. Why wouldn't you want to be friends with that man?
Yeah, and look, I'm not trying to crap on Hall here, but this, from every reported story and, you know, everybody recounting the story that was actually there, I can't remember exactly what happened, but I think it was like the week or two before this, Hall like carelessly swung a chair or something. He effed up Sags.
I remember
really
hearing
bad.
That. Yeah, I remember hearing about the chair.
Yeah, and he effed him up really bad and gave him a major concussion and whatever. So this was the receipt.
Then a year later, Vince McMahon would do that to Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Yeah. At least with Vince, you could argue he didn't know what the F he was doing.
And damn it, pal, I signed the checks.
Yeah, right.
What does Jerry Sags do for you? He'll give me the pit stop.
Good Lord. But, yeah, so... I don't know. I mean, it sucks, but at the same time, it's like, if you're going to, you know, blast somebody carelessly in the head with a chair and send them to the hospital, yeah, they're probably going to F you up right back. Especially, you know, I mean, I've never heard of either one of the Nasty Boys backing down from a fight. So, either way, a couple more.
I imagine that Knobs is the insane one. He just seen him on shows and stuff. You know, he's like nuts.
Yeah, I've always...
I've met Sags at WrestleCon before. He just seems like a down-earth dude.
Yeah. Oh, my dad met both of them in... oddly enough, they were hanging out with Road Dogg at an airport in Atlanta. And they were, like, in the bar area waiting for their flight. My dad saw them, and he went up and started talking to them, and they were nice. But he said Knobs was, like, super friendly and chatting and whatever. And he said Sags just kind of sat there and... He would say something every once in a while, but he wasn't like super social or anything.
Well, maybe I have a different encounter because Sags was being paid to be there.
Well, yeah. Well, he said Sags just seemed like a normal dude, and he was like, I wouldn't have even recognized him because he was dressed normal.
You can. He's got a very distinguishable face and haircut.
Yeah. Well, he was like, if he was by himself, he said I wouldn't have thought anything of it. But he's like, I mean. It's kind of hard to miss Brian Knobs.
I don't know why, but I imagine when he talks, he's always in character and yelling promos and talking to you like he's cutting a promo.
Yeah.
Everyone knows every one of his promos, he's yelling and like talking with his hands.
I guess it's a naturally boisterous dude.
He throws his hand out there and like it looks like that motion you make when you're doing a pop with your hands. Like you make a fist and all your fingers open at the same time. He does that in every promo, if you notice.
Yep.
And he always looks like he jump off the edge or something.
I'm surprised he hasn't blown his voice out. But there you go, man. This is one of only two injuries for this guy. You know, Rey Mysterio Jr. Rey Mysterio. Yeah. Rey Mysterio Jr. blew out his knee last week, and it's said to be serious. He had an MRI done, and no surprise, he has pretty significant damage in both knees. He has an appointment next week to see if he'll need surgery.
I'm going to say he does, because I think he's gone for a while.
Yeah, and then he ends up getting braces after a while. You think at this time, he's like early 20s, I think. I think he's like 21 or something here at most. And he's already needing knee surgery.
And he is still going to this day. High octane. Yep. Way. He hasn't slowed down at all.
I'm wondering if he switched to like Tom Brady talks about. He said most of his workouts are more like stretching and stuff like that. And he keeps himself limber. And that's how he's able to, like, he doesn't break down or anything like that. He doesn't do a whole lot of like weightlifting and stuff like that. So I'm thinking like, that's probably what Ray does. I mean, he's in great shape and he's obviously very mobile still at this point.
Two goats. Right. Maybe they all do the same thing.
Yep. And I mean, obviously Jericho's not what he used to be or not anywhere close, but he can still move at least. And he said
he uses his secret powers himself. He's a wizard.
Yeah, exactly. He said he did DDPY, and he said otherwise his career would have ended a long ass time ago. So either way, Harlem Heat and Public Enemy are both currently working without contracts, and there have been a ton of rumors about Harlem Heat going to the WWF. But word is that WWF has already committed so much money to long-term guaranteed contracts that they're now second-guessing spending all that money. Uncle Dave says...
I wonder what Harlem Heat would have did in WWE.
Yeah, right.
In 1987. I wonder what they would have done with them.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
There's a thinker.
Hey, actually, well, still would have been involved, but it would have been cool if they would have like came in and joined with Ahmed Johnson to kind of even the odds.
They have their own words for that.
Yeah. Well, Uncle Dave about this says, quote, does the name Mark Henry come to mind? Remember that Henry signed a 10-year multi-million dollar contract at this point and had yet to shown nothing so far. So
we're currently going through that as we speak with Gable Steveson.
I know, right?
And yet his brother's on TV already.
Who's his brother?
He's in the he was in the Diamond Mine. What's his name? I forget. Hold on.
I didn't even know he had a brother.
He's not been on TV in a while.
Wow. So the big signee, the famous name and everything, not even on TV yet.
He was on Raw a couple weeks ago with Kurt Angle.
Well, he's clearly not, you know, ready to go. But his brother is, who nobody knew.
What's his damn name? Hold on, I'm looking at his name right now.
Damon Kemp. His actual
name. Damon Kemp, yeah, that's his name. Damon Kemp. Yeah, that's his brother.
Never heard of him. Huh. All right.
He's pretty good.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. Hopefully they can get something out of
him. This is going
to
sound very weird, but he had a really good ambulance match with Julius Creed. I was like, oh, God, an ambulance match. It actually turned out to be really good.
Wow. Yeah, those can go one of two ways. they can be good or, you know, they kind of played him to death in WCW.
I look at the Creed brothers. I'm like, I think that's what they want Gable Steveson to be.
Yeah. Yeah. Looking at him, you can definitely tell he's related to Gable Steveson.
I had no idea he was until I saw it on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't just jump to that conclusion, but seeing them next to each other, it's like, yeah, I get it.
He looks like Russell Wilson.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
Damon, I mean.
Right. So either way, they're hesitant to commit more money to signing anyone new unless it's for a major name, and Harlem Heat probably won't make the cut.
1997, it could be argued they were the best tag team on the planet. Why? I don't get that.
Yeah, right.
Well, you know, between them and the Steiners.
They don't exactly have a black tag team. I mean, it's not, you know, you don't have to quote unquote check the boxes with everything, but I mean, it's just not anything they have at this point. Think about all the tag teams they have at this point. A whole lot of white.
Yeah. The Road Warriors are back.
Headbangers, the Godwins.
Well, when you say a whole lot of white, then you mention the Godwins. Good Lord, you're saying a mouthful.
Yeah. The New Age Outlaws are they there yet, or are they coming?
97? They're on their way.
Okay. Well, obviously Bulldog and Owen, whenever they team.
You could throw Vader and Mankind in there. They were a team for a while.
Yeah, that's true. This one, God. It's kind of a weird one, but I threw it in because it was funny. At the WCW Saturday night tapings, Jim Duggan faced The Gambler, and Uncle Dave has not seen it yet, but he was told that it's one of the worst matches of all time. No.
Who the hell is The Gambler? Kenny Rogers?
Well, of course.
WCW The Gambler.
Yeah, let me know, because I used to know, but I forgot.
I'm going to say, just before we look, I'm going to say it was Smash from Demolition, because he's like, he had like a million gimmicks here.
Okay, yeah, I'm looking at pictures of him. I have no idea who the hell this guy is. He almost looks like he could be a member of the Armstrong family. But either way, it's funny. He wears like the full Kenny Rogers outfit to the ring, too.
Oh, of course he does. Got an ace in his hand. Oh, I like this. He's pulling an ace out of his sleeve. That's clever.
Yeah, right.
That's clever. I like that.
Yep.
How did he not get this guy for aces and eights?
Oh my gosh. Put him in a mask.
He was important enough to have an interview segment with Mean Gene, by the way.
Oh, well then. Bye. Chris Canyon is being given a martial arts gimmick.
And this article right here says he was a bigger flop than Kleischer.
How's that possible?
Why is that the thing?
Well, my thing is, how is that possible? It's not like did they actually play him up? Like, hey, everybody, coming next week, it's The Gambler.
Sure they did. I don't remember. I don't know.
Like, who gives a crap?
He's throwing his cards in a hat like the Joker did in the original Batman. 1989, the best one ever. God. This is so stupid. See, you mentioned this, you bring me down the damn rabbit hole, I ain't coming out.
Yeah, good grief. But either way, Chris Canyon is being given a martial arts gimmick and will feud with Glacier. Speaking of Glacier.
He doesn't become a martial artist at all. But
on a recent Germany tour, Canyon worked under the name Mortis, so that will probably be his gimmick. To which I say,
that is correct.
I'm watching old Superstars in Raw from like late 95 now, and then Chris Canyon was a jobber on Raw, just as Chris Canyon.
Wow.
Kind of funny when you see stuff like that.
Right? But this one, getting into the WWF now. WWF is handling the pay-per-view responsibilities for the upcoming Sugar Ray Leonard Hector Camacho boxing match.
They did that a lot with Leonard. How was he never on WWE TV?
I know, weird. When I started
binge watching stuff on the Peacock back in the 80s, for the 80s, it was on Primetime Wrestling. They promoted the hell out of the fight between him and this guy Lalonde.
Yeah.
Like they promoted it to death, almost like they were making money off of it.
Well, they actually were. They didn't make money off of it, but
they probably got a cut of the pay per view.
Well, we'll get to that here in just a second. But the previous company,
Sugar Ray, in the '80s, man, was a the fighter, not the band. Huge name in boxing, dude. Like an all time legend. No one talks about him like with Ali and Tyson and Mayweather. This guy was a big deal.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, go look at his biography. He's been like 100 TV shows. Like, everybody wanted him for guest spots.
Nice. Well, previous company, TVKO, backed out of the fight after the promoter was investigated for links to organized crime. In boxing? No way!
Wow.
So WWF.
Hey, you're jumped... doing the war nice crime. How you doing?
So WWF jumped in to save the day. Several years ago, WWF handled promotional responsibilities for another Sugar Ray Leonard fight, and that show lost a ton of money. Which
that had to be the LaLonde one I was talking about. Let me just see.
Yeah.
It lost money, you said?
Yep. Apparently, it lost a lot of money. Which is why WWF hasn't promoted a boxing pay-per-view since then. So anyway, expect a lot of promotion for the fight on WWF TV in the coming weeks.
This should have been promoted as Sugar Ray Leonard versus Fabio. Does LaLonde look like? He's a blonde, pretty white boy.
Yeah. This one's another...
I want to see the numbers for this. Hold on. This has to be the one you're talking about.
Yeah, I know. I had heard about
Sugar Ray,
that
I get, first thing I get is Mark McGrath.
Yeah, I had heard about that in the past, that they lost their ass on that. So that's why they kind of, they tried dipping their toe into boxing promotion, and because they thought it would be another revenue source, and they lost a crap ton of money, and Vince was like, nope, we're done.
They agreed to a $20 million purse split. Leonard getting 15, LaLonde getting 5 million. Wow, what a freaking lopsided pay.
Right? Wow.
That's nuts. I see anything on the thing here for the money.
Yeah. I don't know what their cut was or anything. This next thing is another one of those funny Uncle Dave says kind of things, but he might be right on this one. Uncle Dave finally saw Shotgun Saturday Night's debut episode and said it looked like a public access wrestling show, which is probably not.
Yeah, okay.
Which probably wasn't the look that they were going for.
You said the first episode?
Yeah.
This was the one in Penn Station, right? Was it Penn Station or one of those stations in New York?
Yeah, I think so.
We went there. Remember we took a picture of the escalator that Undertaker Tombstone Triple H on?
Yep. I remember that.
It was either Penn Station or the other big one, Grand Central.
Yeah. I want to say
Penn because it was right in front of the garden. It sounds like it's the right one.
All right.
The garden.
Well, Bob Backlund was hilarious, but that was the only good thing on the show. When Bob Backlund's the best thing you got on the show, you got problems. God. Speaking of that, though, WWF has dropped the Flying Nuns gimmick because of complaints from their debut last week. I wonder why.
Did I ever tell you that Bastion Booger debuted as like a monk named something Friars? And yeah. Then USA. I'm watching Mad on monk. Raw, and then, like, the next week he's Bastion Booger. And I go look it up. Apparently USA did not want him being the angry monk or whatever he was.
Bruce Pritchard talked about it. He said the reason they dropped it was because they were getting a lot of angry calls and letters from I don't know what part of Christianity has monks. I don't know if it's I think it's Catholic.
I thought it was Buddhism, honestly.
There are Buddhist monks, but there are other ones like the friars and stuff like that. Like
that's their actual example, something friars.
Yeah, Friar Ferguson, I think.
Yeah. Sounds right.
So I think that's Catholic that have the friars, monks, whatever.
Well, damn, pal, so, now he's going to eat nothing but fried food.
Good Lord. But yeah, so that's why they dropped it, because of so many angry letters and calls and whatever. Let him call!
I'm offended.
This one, though, like, yeah, like...
Nobody ever called about Kane?
I don't know. Maybe because that one's just a name. I have no idea. But this was...
He's literally coming out of hell, like, with the fire and all that. No one ever complained about that.
What? Yeah, right. But those two guys are going back to using their headbangers gimmick on this week's Shotgun Saturday Night. Also on the show. Also on the show, there were lots of chants of Rocky sucks at Rocky Maivia. The second week in a row, reviews of the show.
Those age badly, huh?
Yeah, right. But for the second week in a row, reviews of the show were universally negative. Yeah, I don't think it lasted.
So shocked.
Right. Yeah, I don't think this one lasted very long. I can't remember when they canceled it. After a while, it was just a while. Show.
was going to say, yeah, it did last a while, but not in the current form that it is right there.
Right. Flying Nuns thing was just dumb. Like, I remember Jim Cornette talked about it, because, like, he had a hand in doing it, whatever. And, like, the Flying Nuns was a show back in, what, the 70s? Like, who the hell was going to get that?
Were they men in the show, too?
Say what?
Were they men in the show, too?
No, I think it was like actual like female nuns. So I don't know why they were like, oh, we're going to slap this. Well, yeah.
That's why I'm asking. Yeah, why are the guys being nuns? Not that there's anything wrong with that. I don't want a letter, but I've never heard of a male nun. So what's the point of this?
I don't know. Just the whole gimmick was effing stupid. But that they actually
feel like... screams Catholic boys and nuns to me, it's the Headbangers, man.
Right. Well, and it's like, first of all, yeah, you got the male nuns, whatever. And then, second of all, then they, like, for the build-up packages, they actually filmed them walking out of that St. Patrick's Cathedral we went to. And they look like the freaking Headbangers, so there's that.
Hey, and hey, so, it was Sister Mosh and Sister Thrasher. What's wrong with that?
Good Lord. And on top of all of it, let's see, the Flying Nuns... Or excuse me, the Flying Nun. It was just one woman. So, yeah, it was a show that aired... well, there was three seasons. It aired in the 60s to the 70s. Just
an angel?
I have no idea. Well, she had... Oh, it was Sally Field. That was it. Sally Field was, like, the main character. It aired from 67 to 1970.
Okay, so it had some name value. At least not... Maybe not back then, at least now.
Yeah, but in 1997, who the hell remembers this?
Whoa! My mother used to watch this show, bro. It was a Flying Nun, bro. I could see the Headbangers doing it, bro.
My gosh.
Tell me
how. Oh, so dumb.
I'll wait.
You might be right. Speaking of, we've got quite a few stupid gimmick stories coming here. This next one.
I thought we were in 97, not 95.
Yeah. Well, expect Bradshaw and Barry Windham to be put together as a heel tag team as a 90s version of the Blackjacks. Yep. That does happen.
Yeah, that got some steam for a while, to be fair.
I will say, I don't completely fault them for trying this. I mean, it was
Wasn't Barry Windham's dad one of the Blackjacks?
Yeah, Blackjack...
Windham.
Mulligan, well,
yeah.
There's... Mulligan and, yeah, because the other one was Lanza. Well, Mulligan, I think, was either in, I don't know if he was in jail at this time, or if he just wasn't around or whatever.
Mulligan's
but they,
still alive.
Say what?
Mulligan's still alive to this day. I know one of them passed away, right?
Lanza, I believe.
So
Lanza,
Mulligan could be Uncle Howdy?
Yeah. Well... Blackjack Lanza was, they got him because he was actually like under the WWF payroll. He did backstage
stuff.
Yeah, and
he gave his blessing to it too, by the way.
Yeah.
That's what Cornette said.
Yeah. I mean, I thought if anybody goes back and watches the promos, I thought the promos were cool. I thought the look was cool.
I dare you to pick two other guys who could be Blackjacks other than Bradshaw and Windham.
Yeah, right. They were big southern bastards, and one of them literally had the lineage, so why the hell not? Blackjack Mulligan is also the father of IRS, by the way.
Right.
There you go.
That's a very unique family tree. IRS, Windham, Blackjack Mulligan, Bray Wyatt,
Bo Dallas.
What a unique tree, dude.
Yep, they definitely spread them gimmicks around. But either way, it's the final stupid gimmick I got for you. Well,
not one bad wrestler either, by the way.
No, none of them sucked. Some of them were better than others, but, you know.
Gary's probably better than them all. Yeah.
Tiger Jeet Singh and his son Tiger Ali Singh have some sort of deal with the WWF, with both of them scheduled to come in. Singh Sr.
Flop.
Singh Sr. will likely just be a manager of some sort, since he's 52 years old and has been washed up for years. Yeah.
God, that had to be Meltzer saying that.
Yeah. Define washed up, because I think his whole...
Why would you say that, though? Oh, he's washed up. Why would you say that? Why don't you say he's aged and he can't wrestle anymore?
Yeah, right. It's like,
no, you're gonna be a dick about a-hole. It.
Right. It's like, I think his whole gimmick before is basically just being the Indian version of the Sheik. So, and he carried a saber. But either way, WWF has big plans for Singh Jr. with plans to make him... with plans to make him an ethnic star to tour the Middle East countries, as well as parts of Canada.
Yeah, he won the Kuwaiti Cup. They did.
Yep. As well as parts of Canada that have large Indian populations. I didn't know until just the last few years that that was a thing, that there are a lot of Indians that live in Canada.
Ariel Helwani's from there. I believe he's some sort of Middle Eastern.
Jinder Mahal is Canadian, so that's weird. I had no idea, because you would think, I mean, India.
You know, do you ever see the movie Captain Phillips, Tom Hanks?
No, I haven't seen it, but I
know about it. Oh God, it's a classic. All the guys in that, I believe they're from like Minnesota, so they have a huge population of what race those
Somalis.
Guys? Those Somali, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
I was like, it's really random. Minnesota?
That one I knew. That one's weird, too. But that one I knew because...
I'm not saying there's anything wrong with it. I just don't get it.
Yeah. Well, like, that one Democratic senator that's from their female senator, I can't think of her name, Ilhan Omar. She's, like, Somali or something like that. And I was like, really? Minnesota? And then I, like, people talk about it. They're like, oh, yeah, big population of them up there. I'm like, I never would have guessed. Because when you think of, like, Minnesota and Canada, they're obviously very cold places. Somalis
only white people.
Yeah. Well, Somalis and Indians are from
every
hot
black
climates.
Man ever told me has told me they don't like cold. They're tropical people. But I don't think they're going to be living there.
Yeah. So I'm like, really? Why did you pick that place? Like, whatever. It is what it is. But...
I just always sounded like I weird. I'm like Somalia to Minnesota. I totally get it. Yeah, okay. Direct shot. Boom.
Yeah, right. It's
I want to be careful with my words. I don't want to get crap here. But like, you know, you think about a lot of Cuban people in Miami, Mexican people in SoCal, Texas. Yeah, okay. I get it. Okay. Somali people in Minnesota, really?
Yeah, it's an odd one.
There's not really a direct flight there or direct way there.
Right. Well,
I guess the same could be said for India to Canada, but whatever.
Yeah. Well, I will say the Tiger Jeet Singh, or excuse me, Tiger Ali Singh story here. He flops. They try a few things with him. Doesn't work out.
Yeah, I'll bring us full circle to Headbanger Mosh. Was it Mosh, I believe? God.
Yes, it was. Yeah.
And when they put the what do you call it? I think it's the hijab.
They actually put a turban.
Or is it
on
a turban? Is it a turban? Okay.
Yeah.
Him and D'Lo Brown, because you know that was a brilliant idea.
Oh God, what? D'Lo Brown was put in a lot of situations where he didn't fit. Like first he was in the Gangstas in Smoky Mountain, and then he's this, and then in TNA they put him in Aces and Eights. I'm like, do any of these fit him?
They just need a wrestler.
Yeah,
someone
right.
who's good.
Yeah. Right. He's a good hand, damn it. Speaking of Smoky Mountain, though, former Smoky Mountain...
Say what you will, but he always had a job.
That is true. But former Smoky Mountain wrestler Punisher, a.k.a. Bull Buchanan, is being brought into the WWF to train with Tom Pritchard. WWF also has interest in ECW's Mike Awesome, but they want him to get more wrestling experience first because he's pretty much only worked garbage matches in FMW for most of his career.
Redundant statement is redundant.
So, we want him to get away from the garbage of FMW and get some real wrestling training. Go to ECW. Like, what? Good Lord.
In his defense, he became an awesome wrestler, no pun intended.
Yeah, right. Yeah, he was good. freaking ruin him in WCW, but you know, whatever.
Are you saying the fat chick gorilla ruined him? I'm walking away from this podcast. I'm done with this. We're done.
That 70s guy, fat chick thrilla, the Canadian Mike Awesome. Like, just, oh, that was just like, why? Him being Canadian, by the way, was the least stupid of all the gimmicks.
Yeah, remember when Elix Skip was also Canadian?
Yeah. Because he happened to be trained by Scott D'Amore. Therefore, Canadian. But anyway, Vampiro turned down a major soap opera role in Mexico because they wanted him to play the role of an American Border Patrol officer, and he thought it would get him heat.
You just watch SmackDown 2004 if you want to see how that works out.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even know what to say. And he also, this is the least of all of it, but he's Canadian. God, whatever.
The Canadian playing an American Border Patrol officer on the Mexican soap opera. Did I get that right?
Yep. And he'd probably be speaking Spanish on the show, which just didn't negate the whole gimmick. Who is the casting director
for this show? Should be shot.
Right. God. Antonio Inoki plans to do another World Wrestling Peace Festival interpromotional show this year. He was in Mexico City over the weekend meeting with EMLL to set it up. The plan is for it to take place later in the spring, either in Mexico City or possibly in Cuba. Well, that's a hell of a choice. So not
North Korea?
Yeah. Well, that was the first one he did, was in North Korea. But was that 94, 95? I know
Hogan was under WCW contract at the time, so it was definitely 94 or later.
Yeah, and I liked when Eric Bischoff brought it up to Hogan. He just was like, don't think I can make that one, brother.
Say what you will about that man and his decisions, but that was probably one of the smarter ones.
Yeah, right. Good Lord. But yeah, so we already hit North Korea, and that worked out so well. Let's go to Cuba. Like, F off, Inoki. I'd be like,
I keep in mind, it's not Cuba today.
Yeah, I don't know how Cuba is today. I really have no idea.
I mean, it's not Fidel Castro today, right? Obviously.
Oh, well,
so it's probably not as bad.
Yeah, I would hope.
Oh, you know, let's go to Russia.
Yeah, right. That would probably be the best of all of them, as long as you don't have, you know, hash oil in your bag or something like that. But either way. Oh, God. All Japan and FMW seem to be building up to an interpromotional angle. Oh, joy. It's playing out in the wrestling media. It's playing out in the wrestling media.
There's a pair.
Right. Between Giant Baba and Atsushi Onita, and will likely lead to a match between Hayabusa and Kenta Kobashi. God. It doesn't appear that one-on-one match ever happened, by the way, but Hayabusa did work a handful of tag matches in All Japan later in the year. Well, how about that? You mean the guy who could wrestle on the FMW roster actually went and wrestled other wrestlers? How about that? At the New Japan Pro Wrestling Tokyo Dome.
I got a video, by the way. Somebody made an FMW ring out of a toy ring. And they blew it up in their living room. Said, hey, I made an exploding ring.
Why would you blow it up in your living room? God. It's almost as bad as those people who fry turkeys inside the house. God. But this was funny. At the New Japan Pro Wrestling Tokyo Dome show, Chris Jericho worked as Super Liger. It was so poorly received that the gimmick has already been dropped after the one match. Jericho is expected to continue to work.
How has he never been Super Liger on AEW TV? What the hell?
I know. I know, right?
Really? He's done everything else.
Well, Jericho's expected to continue to work for New Japan Pro Wrestling for a while as himself instead of as Super Liger. Jericho later said that the match was bad because the mask obstructed his vision and he couldn't work with it. I could buy that. He said he didn't really wear it a whole lot. He hated masks, and he said, I'm honestly surprised that the real Jushin Thunder Liger could work in the mask he has, because it looks awful. It looks like that would suck to work in.
My first thing is like the horns. I'm like, how do you do that? Do any right. moves at all?
Yeah. Yeah, Jericho said it was awful. It didn't fit right. Kept falling in his eyes. Like, yeah, I could see that. To nobody that, or to anybody who hasn't seen it, he just, it was basically the Jushin Liger outfit, but it was all silver. And then obviously he had his big blonde hair hanging out the back instead of the black hair. So.
Yeah, when it was luscious, not like now.
Yeah, not stringy and brought back with the help of Bosley's. Did I say that? My bad.
You're getting a letter.
Oh, well, actually. It's the third time I've said that already.
He actually used a hair club for men.
Oh, well, excuse the F out of me.
Me, right?
Jerry Lawler seems to be taking a more serious interest in turning around the USWA promotion now that he's the 100% owner of it. Right now, Bill Dundee...
Oh, Randy, man, not a moment too late, huh?
Bill Dundee, Randy Hales, and Brian Christopher are handling the booking. Well, then. Yeah, that's going to go real well, Jerry. You're going to sell 1997,
it... 1997, and... Grandmaster Sexay is about to be in the... Or, he's not that yet, but... Was it too cool? No, was it too
much?
Too hot, right?
Too hot.
Exactly.
That's right. Yeah, no, that was too sexy.
Taylor. Yeah,
too sexy. Brian Christopher and too hot Scott Taylor. Yeah.
So he's already about to jump off the AWA or USWA himself.
He actually went back and forth for a while, which was weird because he was a babyface in USWA, and then he was a heel in WWF.
This is dad's annoying ass laugh. I always thought that was right. Fun. Exact same laugh, dude.
Yeah, right.
Some people say he caught a bad break at birth. That's just a rumor.
Good lord.
Hey, I didn't say that. JR did.
I know. Well, speaking of which, USWA is doing a Nation of Domination angle where guys like Mo and Mabel, formerly Men on the Mission, and others using names like Sir Muhammad, Shaquille Ali, Queen Moesha, and others...
They just went, hey, what famous actor, athlete, or television show is black? We're going to use that, huh?
Basically.
Lazy booking.
What's vaguely Islamic? But this was Moesha actually...
was the name of that show Brandy did, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I thought so.
Yep. This was actually the original Nation of Domination, with some guys bouncing back and forth between USWA and WWF, but it was mostly Say what?
PG-13. Who were the token white guys? PG-13 as well?
Yep. Yeah, they actually came from USWA.
That's right, they did.
It was mostly started in the USWA before turning into a major WWF faction. Yep. That's crazy. But either way...
You know, in hindsight, I think the Nation of Domination wasn't that bad. They could have just did more with it.
Yeah, right. I mean, most of the guys in the faction were damn good. So, there you go.
All Hall of Famers, right?
Pretty much. Except for
D'Lo
Brown.
Not D'Lo or PG-13, that's it.
Yeah, right.
Oh, I forgot Clarence Mason. Well, the main ones. Yeah. Farouk, Godfather, Mark Henry, The Rock, Bilby.
Yep. Yeah, those are the important ones. But either way, last story we got here. The indie promotion called Continental Wrestling Alliance that had been running shows at the Dallas Sportatorium every week went out of business last month. Apparently, the money guy simply walked out during the last show because he couldn't pay everyone. That's effed up.
What's it called?
Continental Wrestling Alliance. Which,
The wrestling alliances are usually not that good. Alliance usually doesn't last.
Yeah, right. A former Dallas wrestling manager...
Because somebody's going to want more.
Of course. A former Dallas wrestling manager, Gary Hart, has already stepped in and started a new promotion called World Class The Next Generation. Ooh,
more laziness.
Yeah, right. What's the name of that new Star Wars or Star Trek show that's doing so good? Good lord. Yeah, I don't think that lasted either.
So
by
it was WWC, APWA, RCW, and NWA,
Oh, man.
How can the NWA be in an alliance with somebody else? I thought they were the alliance.
Yeah, right? They are the bar. God. But anyway, we're going to take our next break. When we come back, we're going to dive into the actual Royal Rumble that we're going to be talking about right after this break.
Follow the Main Event Marks at facebook.com/MainEventMarksPod, on Twitter at @MainEvent_Marks, and on Instagram at @MainEvent_Marks and at @MainEventCollector.
By God, somebody's interrupting the Main Event Marks!
Sit down, JR. It's just me, Kyle Sullivan, a.k.a. Shaggy Von Doom, your host of Here in Puckburg on the Hockey Podcast Network. I know, a hockey show on the Main Event Marks. Who would have thought? This is an invasion angle. Somewhere between the Nexus and when WCW tried to invade WWE, you know, somewhere in there. But I'm over here just telling you that one half of your tag team champions over here, Greg, he told his story of his love for the game of hockey over on my show. And if you'd like to hear that story, all you have to do is search Here in Puckburg, wherever you get your podcast, or on YouTube. In the meantime, Shagamania's gotta go run wild on some other hockey show. So, just remember, quote the Raven, nevermore. Take your vitamins, say your prayers, and
oh yeah!
Hello everyone, my name is Ryan McCarthy, and I'm the host of the No Credentials Required podcast. Start your work week with the Monday Drop-In, where I talk about the sports beat in the Capital District, also known as the Mighty 518, as well as Metro New York sports from an upstate point of view. I also give a life lesson from a weekly sports story, so you might learn something from that. I also have a midweek podcast where I interview different sports personalities and talk about a wide array of topics. Take a listen and subscribe on your preferred podcast app, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Spreaker, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and iHeartRadio. Also, check out our social media channels on Twitter and Instagram, BellyUpNCR, and Facebook.com/BellyUpSportsNCR. We're a part of the Belly Up Sports Podcast Network in association with Godzilla Media. No credentials required, where you don't need a press pass to talk sports.
The Main Event Marks are available wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. Find all of our links on our link tree at linktr.ee/MainEventMarks.
And we're back.
We're back.
WWF Royal Rumble 1997. The date was January 19th, 1997. Tagline.
Oh, it's stoked. We're going to the same building for the same event.
That building looks cool. Like, The way they did it up for both of the Rumbles was pretty awesome.
I'm not going to set the attendance record, though.
Yeah.
Because my Golden State Warriors just took that record, damn it.
Yeah, I forgot. I totally forgot about that. And didn't Meltzer disputed that, too?
Yeah. Because, you know, he's there with his little clicker.
What an idiot. Like,
I would think he'd be pro-inflating it because he likes the Warriors.
He's just a weird, weird dude. Like, he wants to argue with effing everybody.
It's like Grandpa. But,
yep. Well, this is January 19th, 1997. The tagline, "No more Mr. Nice Guy." And
who are we talking about?
I don't know.
Because I don't think there's any heel turn here. So,
no.
Which is what that tagline suggests to me.
Well, I think it just means Sean isn't following the rules anymore.
I thought the tagline was "Remember the Rumble."
That was night. That was the next time they went there. Was it 2017?
Oh yeah, okay.
But the venue was the Alamo Dome in San Antonio, Texas. Attendance 60,477, and a pay per view buy rate of
72.
Well, WWF Royal Rumble drew the second largest paid attendance in U.S. wrestling history. The only larger paid attendance was for WrestleMania 3, which drew 78,000 fans.
WrestleMania 93,000 fans.
Yeah. WrestleMania 8 had more people in the building than this Rumble event, but WrestleMania 8 was heavily papered. Yeah.
But I'm sure he has the books, too. Sorry.
Well, here's the caveat. They did have more people in the building. However, it was heavily papered and not nearly as many of those fans paid. Where did WrestleMania 8 take place?
The Hoosier Dome.
Was that also Hoosier Dynasty? Okay.
Eight, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Eight was an indie.
Okay. Well, yeah. I don't know. Why the hell would they heavily paper that one? I don't know.
Indie. No, they don't go to, what the hell is there to do in indie?
That's true. They have a beautiful arena they could do WrestleMania at now, but to your point.
Oh, yeah.
They try to do WrestleMania at like more destination areas now, which I totally understand. So there's zero chance that everyone.
So the next two are LA and Philly.
Yeah. And they usually stick to New York, Philly, anywhere, California.
I have a feeling 41 is going to be, I have a feeling 41 is going to be in Vegas.
Yeah, that would be another one. I can't. Have they ever done one in Vegas? I don't think so. Have they?
Yeah, WrestleMania 9, the ill-fated one.
Oh, okay.
Remember, I sent you a picture of the venue when I was in Vegas for SummerSlam last year. I think this is where WrestleMania 9 was.
Maybe I remember. But well, either way. But the WWF sold 20,000 Rumble tickets in the last few days, due mostly to $5 and $7 discount coupons from local Taco Bells.
Can I get that for this one? Damn.
Yeah, right. I remember Pritchard talking about this promotion. Because of those cheap tickets, the show didn't break
any... Sorry, did you say Taco Bell?
Yes.
Wow, so many jokes with that.
How stereotypical of them. But because of so many cheap tickets, the show didn't break many of the gate records. Plus, when you factor in the massive amount of money spent on advertising, the show wasn't as big of a moneymaker as one might expect. It was still profitable, but not hugely so.
He knows.
Well, we could say about Dave saying that, but it was like Bruce Pritchard did talk about that. He said they wanted to have a full building at all cost, and they spared no expense. They did a crap ton of advertising. They gave away cheap ass tickets to Taco Bell because they wanted to fill that damn dome. They came close.
Ironically, the current one this year is going to be the biggest gate in Royal Rumble history.
That's nuts. That's pretty sweet, though.
No help from Taco Bell.
I wonder if they like the University of Texas in San Antonio, or if they have a different team that they like down there. Because Cody's papa was a big University of Texas fan. Maybe he could rock some.
Oh, screw them! Go blue.
No, go scarlet and gray. Damn it!
Yeah.
But we start the show with a video about Shawn Michaels' boyhood dream that we've heard about a million times. They then transition into saying that the hometown boy returns tonight as a man. Commentary team for the evening.
How long did you keep us here?
The commentary team for
the evening. Do you remember that?
No.
It was on one of the very first episodes of Fresh Prince. It said, enter his boys, leave his men. How long are you going to keep us here?
Good Lord. wow. But the commentary team for the evening is a three-man booth of good old JR, Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, and Vince McMahon. Uncle Dave notes that after several years of trying, they finally got Jim Ross to wear the black cowboy hat as a full-time gimmick. A few years ago, when Ross was fired from the WWF, he was fired for numerous reasons, but one of them was his refusal to go along with WWF, wanting to portray him as good old JR and wear a cowboy hat.
Hi, how times have changed.
Yep. Well, Bruce Pritchard talked about that. He said they had the hardest damn time. They thought... He said, Ross thought now we were ribbing him.
I can't even picture him without the damn hat now.
Right. Yeah, he said, he just thought we were ribbing him and we were making fun of him and whatever. And, you just make fun of us Southern folk. Think we're all damn cowboys, like, on Dallas. And he said, finally we got him. He's like, now you can't get the damn hat off him.
It's literally his trademark.
Yep. He wrote a book called From Under the Black Hat. There you go.
But can't make this stuff up, guys.
Yep. Well, it's kind of like, you think about some of the gimmicks in WWF. It's like, some of them were stupid when you really think about it, but like IRS. Iconic. Everybody remembers IRS. He wasn't a main eventer or anything, but he was a tag champ. He was there for a while, had a good run. And I guarantee more people know him as IRS than as Mike Rotunda.
Yeah, go Syracuse.
Good Lord. But our first match of the evening.
You have to imagine that he thought it was a rib because of the polka dots on Dusty.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, by the way, is also iconic.
It is.
I know, but it's like debated today, was it a rib? Like, how else would he now be paid tribute to if he didn't have those polka dots? Like, that's what they do now. Like, Seth Rollins at Hell in a Cell wore the polka dots on his tights.
Right.
Like, what else would you pay tribute to that man?
I think Cody even wore polka dots a few times. I know he did at Stardust. But our first match of the evening here is Hunter Hearst Helmsley with Mr. Hughes in his corner. He's defending.
Hey, that makes sense.
He's defending the WWF Intercontinental title against Goldust. This goes just shy of 17 minutes. After Goldust's entrance, we get a play-up video for the match. They did this a few times. They bleep out Lawler asking Goldust if he's the Q word. I'm not going to repeat it, but y'all know what I mean. Goldust jumps Helmsley in the aisleway, begging the question, what good is Mr. Hughes?
Goldust, I just want to say that Jerry Lawler could have used any other bad profanity, but he picked the least offensive one.
Yeah, right. He didn't drop the F word or nothing like that. So kudos, I guess? I don't know. And now, today, they've co-opted that word, and some gay people, or what, I don't even know, but they refer to themselves as being queer. So it's not even
it's been on the damn Simpsons, for crying out loud.
Yep.
Do you remember that episode? Homer was kind of creeped out by him, and the guy's like, Homer, there's nothing wrong with being queer. He goes, another thing, that's our work making fun of you.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah.
But, yeah.
Once it's on the Simpsons, I think it's fair game for everybody.
Pretty much. But yeah, so just to recap, Goldust jumps Helmsley right in front of his bodyguard, and Hughes just stands there and looks at him. Bell has not rung, by the way, so you can't be.
But that snarl on his face.
Yeah. But Goldust then uses the steel steps right in front of the referee and doesn't get disqualified. This begs the question, what good is Earl Hebner? Goldust works Triple H's legs the entire match. Hunter tries to use Marlena.
Work the leg!
Hunter tries to use Marlena's director's chair. What? And Earl Hebner. So, what?
All I heard was you say, Goldust tried to use Marlena's director chair.
Yeah, I can't remember today. But Hunter tries to use Marlena's director chair, and Earl Hebner takes it from him, finally doing his job here. During the match, Todd Pettengale interviews some country singer named Colin Ray in the crowd.
Todd Pettengale.
Why the hell is this happening? Like, in the middle of a title match, you're like, yeah, let's break away to talk to this guy. Who cares? Then Curtis Hughes distracts the ref while Helmsley gets the IC title, but Marlena distracts him. He kisses her, and Goldust takes the IC title, blasts Helmsley with it. Then Hughes pulls Helmsley out of the ring, breaking the pin and not drawing a DQ for some damn reason. Helmsley distracts.
Did we mention how all the way live she was looking?
Well, I think that goes without saying, but but either way, Hughes distracts Goldust long enough for Helmsley to sneak in, hit the pedigree, and win. I gave this, I thought it was, I don't know, between 2.5-3 stars. Uncle Dave gave it 2. What say you?
I gave it 2. It's just kind of funny looking at this now. I'm like, one of these guys is running a company, the other guy's training guys to wrestle in another company.
Yeah, man, right.
It's kind of crazy looking like that.
Yep. And this match was just okay. But we now go to pre-recorded videos of Bret Hart.
Or they'd have a far worse one next month.
Yeah. We go to a pre-recorded video of Bret Hart talking in the locker room about being a marked man and having to move forward in the Royal Rumble. We then switch to Mankind in the boiler room, saying that he's got a chance tonight to hurt a lot of people. Cool. But then we go to this. It's Farouk with the Nation of Domination taking on Ahmed Johnson. It goes just shy of 9 minutes. Yeah. Well, after PG-13 wraps the Nation to the ring, we get a play-up package for the match, reminding us of Ahmed getting the whole "you're going down" chant going.
God.
That sucked.
I know this is like a different time and era. You couldn't say very many things, except for apparently the Q word on TV, but you could couldn't come up with something better than "you're going down."
Nope, that was it. But they also recap the various injuries between Ahmed and Farouk and the racial components to this feud. But this one gets jump-started just like
we covered this in one of our previous episodes.
Yep.
Yeah, I think Farouk calls him Uncle Tom on TV.
Yeah, right. If there's
and then he keeps saying he's going to come to his house and whoop his black ass.
Yeah, if not there was a label sure that needs to slap on Ahmed Johnson, it wouldn't be Uncle Tom. But either way, Johnson ends up grabbing a belt and whipping Farouk at one point. This match was pretty rough, I'll say. Ahmed and Farouk.
And this is even the end of it either.
No.
On the night.
Ahmed has Farouk dead to rights, and then Crush gets in and attacks him, drawing the DQ. Uncle Dave gave it a star and a half. I give it two. What say you?
Give it one. I think you both overdid it.
Yeah, it sucks. I don't know. But all the members of the Nation of Domination get in the ring now and attack Ahmed Johnson, getting taken out one at a time. Ahmed walks after Farouk, and a random member of the Nation jumped Ahmed from behind. Ahmed, I said chases, but he basically walks the guy back to the ring.
Hey, Michael Myers him.
And all the way back to the commentary tables, he sets up the steel steps and hits the Pearl River Plunge on that guy through the French announce table.
Now, I thought that was the best part of the whole match.
Right. Ah, man. Yeah, and that's a famous gif as well, because they show it like four or five times. We go to a pre-recorded
this, also, this whole thing reminded me how much I loved Ahmed Johnson. I really thought he was going to be huge.
Yeah, huge. I know. But we now go to pre-recorded comments from Terry Funk. He was taping his fists up and saying that he's Texas-born and Texas-bred, and he was born to rumble.
And your mother's a whore.
My horse is not sick, so I'm going to make it tonight. But we now go to Todd Pettengill standing by with Farouk and the Nation Domination. Who the hell told Todd to shave his head and grow a goatee? Oh, man.
You had the most perfect mullet, man, in the world. You shaved that?
Right?
You should be ashamed of yourself.
Not even in a hair versus hair match, either. But Farouk yells at the members of the Nation of Domination for not helping him out enough, and then he says he's going to put down Ahmed Johnson in the Rumble tonight. Sure.
Sure.
We now
it's the most embarrassing thing ever. He kind of steps all over some commentary you heard a couple Rumbles prior.
Right. Well,
I'll mention that when we get to it.
We now get this. It's Vader versus The Undertaker, 13 minutes and 19 seconds. This is the first time that we see the moving circular light truss during The Undertaker's entrance. I thought that looked pretty damn cool.
It did.
In the middle of this match, Todd Pettengill interviews some random family in the crowd that came all the way from Alaska for this show. Again, I ask, why? Paul Bearer comes
out. You said it earlier in the show. They're just trying to make this show huge.
Yeah.
But it's like, we got celebrities no one's ever heard of. Families coming from far away.
But you got to interview these people in the middle of a damn match. Just why, man? But Paul Bearer comes out with the urn mid-match. The Undertaker goes outside and socks him in the face. Undertaker gets Bearer in the ring, and Bearer begs for mercy. But Vader saves him from being chokeslammed. Bearer, at one point, the Undertaker's outside of the ring, and Bearer jumps off the apron with the urn and bashes it in the back of Undertaker's head, and in the process, falls sure, we'll flat on him. His ass. Like, damn. Taker gets back in the ring, and Vader hits the Vader bomb to win. I kind of like this match. I gave it 2.5. Uncle Dave gave it a star and a quarter. What say you?
I gave it 1. I hated this.
Wow. Wow.
Hard to watch.
Yeah, I don't know. I dug this match. I don't know. I mean, it wasn't anything amazing, but yeah. But The Undertaker wins.
Considering
what
it could have been with these two, yeah, it was bad. I thought.
Yeah, I get that. But The Undertaker wakes up, gets angry, and chokeslams a referee. I feel like that particular referee...
And yet Ken Shamrock gets thrown in jail for doing that.
Right. Wasn't that Chad Patton? Yeah, the blonde guy?
I believe his given Christian name is referee Chad Patton.
Oh, well, yes, of course. I feel like he would always meet The Undertaker's wrath. I don't know why.
He was probably a wrestler back in the day and could take it.
Right. Well, Taker then destroys the ringside area. And even yells something at Vince McMahon before leaving for the backstage. Now we go to video of Stone Cold Steve. Why what?
What did he yell at Vince McMahon?
I have no freaking clue. He yelled something. I tried listening in. I'm like, what the hell did he even say? And they don't mention it. It just kind of happens and they move on. I'm like, okay.
That happened a lot in this era. I'm like, Bret Hart would do it. Austin would do it.
Right. We now get a video of Stone Cold Steve Austin walking backstage saying that he's going to throw 29 other pieces of trash over the top rope. We then see
in the great state of Texas.
We then see the British Bulldog coming into the arena, asking fans if they're ready for the Royal Rumble, and saying that he's going to win because he's bizarre. What? Like, what?
I think he's talking about Goldust.
Like, so you're weird? That means you're going to win? Like, I don't get it. Anyway.
That's right, about Sting yelling Mamacita.
Yeah, right. But up next, we get this. It is the Trios match. The team of Fuerza Guerrera, Heavy Metal, and Jerry Estrada are taking on Paraguayo, Canek, and Hector Garza. It goes just shy of 11 minutes. I like how, for the AAA match, Vince McMahon says, you can only see a spectacle like this in the World Wrestling Federation.
Well, do you know that WCW is about to blow that wide open on Nitro in a couple weeks?
Well, there's that, plus the fact that it's like, these are AAA wrestlers. You can only see this in the world, like, what? Okay. So, this is what I was talking about. Vince can't tell the difference between Heavy Metal and Jerry Estrada throughout the match.
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, I swear, every time Heavy Metal would do something, he'd call him Jerry Estrada, and every time Jerry Estrada would do something, he'd call him Heavy Metal. I'm like, he had me questioning. I'm like, am I wrong?
Heavy Metal is very distinguishable.
Well, both of them were, I mean, they wore similar clothes. It's like, okay, Heavy Metal, whatever. And they had long, dark hair. So I like, I don't know. But in the end, Canek press slams Heavy Metal. Paraguayo grazes him with a double foot stomp and then drops an elbow on him and pins him to win. Uncle Dave said, despite a heavy Hispanic crowd, no one seemed to care about the AAA guys on this show, even though many said that the two AAA dark matches before the show went live on pay-per-view were the best matches of the night. Who was saying that?
Uncle Dave.
God. Yeah. By the way, I forgot the ratings. I gave it 2.5 stars. I thought it was average. Uncle Dave gave it a star. Let's see you.
I gave it 2. It was fun.
Yeah, it was watchable. I didn't think it was horrible. I didn't.
Did you notice that every single AAA guy in this had the most generic mariachis or Mexican music, whatever you want to call it?
Yep.
Dude, that's just lazy.
There you go, man. Yep. It's the Luchas. But Howard Finkel's in the ring next and announces the attendance of 60,477.
He then explains
the rules of the Royal Rumble to the crowd.
And as now, long as the feet can for 5 minutes.
Exactly. Now we get the 30-man Royal Rumble match. It goes 15 minutes, 29 seconds. So Crush of the Nation of Domination is number 1, and Ahmed Johnson's number 2. The fake Razor Ramon comes in at 3 and instantly gets tossed by Ahmed. Farouk comes out to distract Ahmed Johnson, and Johnson eliminates himself to run after Farouk to the back.
And this is when I was talking about they stepped on some commentary from prior years, because I think it was 1992, Macho Man jumps over the top rope to go get Jake the Snake, and he gets back in, and Gorilla Monsoon flat out says, you have to be propelled or thrown out. But yet Ahmed is just out.
Well, his commentary was kind of messed up that same night, because before he said that, the Big Boss Man ran at the ropes, hit them, and flopped out. So, and that counted. So, whatever. I mean, he did the best he could because Macho Man effed up, but yikes. Either way, Phineas
Macho Man messing up in a Royal Rumble is kind of a thing. You remember he tried to pin Yokozuna in 1993?
God. But Phineas I. Godwin enters in at number 4 to brawl with Crush. Number 5 is Stone Cold Steve Austin. Austin comes off the second rope for Phineas, misses, and hits Crush. Then Phineas eliminates Crush. Austin then hits a Stone Cold Stunner on Phineas and eliminates him. Bart Gunn comes out at number 6.
Did you know what Phineas I. Godwin, if you take the initials, spells pig?
Of course. But Bart Gunn comes out at number 6.
We mention that every time we talk about them on the show.
Have to. That doesn't take
Austin. Oh, you didn't. I was trying to cover your ass.
Well, thank you for that. But Austin tosses Bart in short order. A very out-of-shape-looking Jake the Snake Roberts enters at number 7. He gets dumped out as the British Bulldog enters at number 8. Hiroth is the first AAA wrestler to enter at number 9. As usual, Bulldog has a good showing in the Rumble. Number 10 is The Sultan, the future Rikishi. coming out with the Iron Sheik, who would win the gimmick battle royal at WrestleMania 17. The legendary Mil Máscaras enters the Rumble at number 11. 12 is Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
More on him in a minute.
The ring is filling up. Bulldog clotheslines the Sultan out of the ring for the elimination, and Owen Hart is out at lucky number 13. There's a pileup. Owen helps with it, and the Bulldog ends up getting eliminated. He shouts at Owen before leaving.
Yeah, and that becomes a thing for the next couple of weeks on TV, by the way.
Of course it does. Goldust comes out at number 14. Entering at number 15, Cibernetico. Cibernetico and then Puroff get eliminated, and then Mil Máscaras dives off the top rope out of the... on top of Puroff to eliminate himself. He's the second idiot in this match. Wildman Mark Mero comes out at number 16.
Wasn't there a story behind that? He didn't want to get tossed out?
Yes. So they made a compromise to make him look like a moron. But
he apparently said yes, to be fair.
Yep. Oh, well, yeah, I'm not blaming WWF. But Mark Mero and Goldust both eliminate Helmsley. We get Latin Lover entering at number 17. Owen Hart dumps Goldust out before Farouk enters at number 18. Farouk back body drops Latin Lover out of the ring before Ahmed Johnson runs out with a giant plank of wood, smacking Farouk out over the top rope with it.
With the most horrible smacks I've ever seen in my life, by the way.
Yeah, I'm like, dude, can you not control that thing? What the hell?
My 90-pound sister could probably do a better swing with that board than that.
Right. Owen Hart tries to eliminate Mark Mero, and the camera completely misses Steve Austin, dumping them both out.
Good job, this replay.
Number 19 is Savio Vega, who goes in hard on Austin until getting a stun gun and clotheslined out over the top rope. Double J, Jesse James, comes out at number 20.
The real Austin Double J.
Yes. Austin tosses him in short order. We now get the famous meme of Austin sitting on the top rope, Bret Hart's music hitting for number 21, and Austin grabbing his head, looking shocked. These two beat the tar out of each other for a little while, before Jerry the King Lawler gets off commentary to enter at number 22. He jumps over the top rope into the ring. Bret Hart punches him and knocks him right out.
At this point, this is the feud that will never die.
Right. It's like, good Lord, guys. But Fake Diesel now comes out at number 23. Number 24 is the legendary Terry Funk. Rocky Maivia is number 25. Mankind, 26. Flash Funk, 27. And number 28 is Vader. And then number 29 is Henry.
Big, nasty grizzly bear.
Wow. The Mastodon. And number 29 is Henry O. Godwin, Hog.
And so then... I watched Royal Rumble 96 a couple of days ago. Mm-hmm. You know, it was Vader's debut. And Vince McMahon straight up calls him the WWF's Mastodon. He really didn't want to call him that, didn't he?
Glad they talked him out of it, but good Lord. But the final buzzer goes off, and entering the match at number 30 is The Undertaker. All the lights drop when he enters, and once
you know it's
going to
be him, because for some reason the announcers tell us it is.
Yeah, right. I'm like, really? That probably sucked for the guys in the ring. It's like, ah, crap, the lights.
Did Lawler say we should have the whole Royal Rumble like this?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he did.
I didn't catch that.
Ironically, at this third Royal Rumble coming up, we're going to have a pitch black match, and I think it's going to be like that.
Oh,
they haven't said what it is yet. That's probably, nice. That's probably what it's going to be.
Well, Undertaker comes right in and goes after Vader and Mankind. Vader chucks Flash Funk over his head and outside of the ring. Undertaker grabs Henry Godwin by his throat, throws him out over the top. Mankind grabs Rocky with a mandible claw and shoves him out over the top rope. Mankind lands on the apron and pulls Flash Funk out over the top.
I just had a flashback real quick. We said Rocky eliminated him. When I was a kid, I loved Rocky Maivia. I was like one of the few, apparently. And I thought this was the end of his winning streak.
Oh, damn.
No, he doesn't count.
Yep. Either way, Mankind pulls Flash Funk out over the top, and then Funk pulls Mankind outside to eliminate him as well. The refs are distracted by Mankind refusing to leave as Bret Hart tosses Steve Austin. Austin gets right back in the ring since nobody saw him be eliminated, and he tosses The Undertaker and Vader. Bret Hart eliminates Diesel right before Austin runs up behind Bret and chucks him out over the top rope to win. Uncle Dave and I both gave this 3 stars. What say you?
Same.
Yeah, cool Rumble. Cool way to...
I thought it was an underrated Rumble, finish. Actually.
Yeah. Some pretty good names in this one. It's an original way to end that one. It was different. But after the match, Stone Cold immediately gets out of the ring and walks to the back, celebrating. Bret Hart throws an absolute fit, throwing referees and shouting, or shoving referees.
Bret Hart's crying again, also new.
He even grabs Vince McMahon and shouts at him about it before storming off to the backstage area. We hear Shawn Michaels, or we now hear that Shawn Michaels has the flu before we go to an interview with him from earlier in the day. He says he's nervous about tonight, that he won't use that flu as an excuse because tonight he's going to become the WWF champion again. And that takes us to our second to last break of the podcast. When we come back, it's main event time right after this.
Follow the Main Event Marks at facebook.com/mainevent marks pod, on Twitter at @main_event_marks, and on Instagram at @main_event_marks and at @main_event_collector.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night. My name is Thomas, and what's your name?
I'm Alan. Yeah. We're brothers.
That's right.
Yeah. Brother, mother, same mother and father.
Your room was...
Oh, we shared a room.
Shared a room.
We shared a room.
Thought I knew your face.
Yeah, we go way back, mate. Yeah.
We should do a podcast then.
We have.
We do a podcast.
We do a podcast.
What's it called?
The...
Brocast.
Yeah, that was planned.
Yeah, well...
What do we do?
Well, we cover all different things in the world of pop culture. We're talking about comic books, we're talking professional wrestling, and we're talking about movies. Go back and watch classic retro wrestling events, the likes of WWE, WCW, and if you do like that, you can check us out on Apple iTunes, also on Podbean, Anchor, and on Podknife. Also check us out on Twitter at The Brocast. That's BROKAST.
Hey, it's all right. Good on you.
Yeah. Instagram also at The Brocast Podcast.
Remember, we don't spell it with a C. You spell it with a K.
Sorry, mate.
Take it easy.
The Main Event Marks are available wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. Find all of our links on our link tree at linktr.ee/main event marks.
Then we're back.
We're back.
Main event time. It's Psycho Sid defending the WWF World Heavyweight title against Shawn Michaels with Jose Lothario in his corner. This goes just shy of 14 minutes. During Shawn's entrance, we see that moving circular lighting truss again. That one I always remembered because they let you know how big the arena is. The crowd's going nuts. They just show you the whole atmosphere during his entrance. It's awesome. Definitely a big fight feel. But obviously HBK gets cheered like a god. It's his hometown, so of course. And I think this is the only place where Psycho Sid actually got booed for obvious reasons. But even then, he wasn't like fully booed because like on his way to the ring, he's still fist bumping people. Like, I was like, wow. We always talked about he had it. Fans loved him for, you know, whatever reason. You and I, we always talk about we were big Sid fans back in the day.
He's the man.
So, who's the man?
He'll tell you.
Yeah, right. Well, he always asked the question. I don't know if he ever answered it. So he was just like, he's like, no, seriously, who is the man? But anyway, and then Rhino ripped that off years later. But I always loved his name, by the way, like with the pyro shooting off, like lighting up his name.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah, I know the Warrior did that with his logo, but with Sid having the pyro, that was sweet. So at one point, Sid catches the Sweet Chin Music and throws Michaels outside of the ring, and then he power bombs him on the outside mat. Sid goozles Jose Lothario, and then Jose's son Pete comes up and he goozles him too. Pat Patterson runs up and finally stops him from doing anything to Lothario's. And Sid gets back in the ring. Ref gets bumped now. And Sid drops Michaels with a choke slam. And a new referee runs out for a near fall. Sid knocks that referee out for, you know, reasons.
You looked at it funny.
I guess so. Count faster, damn it. Count like we do in Arkansas. One, two. The number after two.
Two and a half.
Anyway. Right. But HBK grabs a camera and blasts Sid in the back and then in the head. The first referee wakes up to count, but it's only a two. Michaels finally tunes up the band. Sid stands up and Michaels finally connects with Sweet Chin Music, to win the WWF World Title. Uncle Dave only gave this the deuce. I gave it 3 stars. I thought the drama kind of brought it up a notch. What say you?
I gave it 3 as well.
It was a fun match. It wasn't like technically sound or whatever, but I don't think it needs to be, you know, some Tokyo Dome main event to be a great match. But well, I don't know.
Well, actually,
we shouldn't say that to old Uncle Dave. Nope, it's got to be 60 minutes. It's got to have 2 Japanese guys in it. 2, damn it. Main event, Tokyo Dome, 7 stars. But now Jose Lothario celebrates with Sean in the ring.
That's halfway, right?
Yeah. Jose Lothario celebrates with Sean in the ring, hugging him with the WWF title. Sean's parents also celebrate in the front row as the crowd just explodes. The babies get thrown in the air. Sean walks around hugging his family and friends and just random fans in the crowd. Yeah. And he climbs on the commentary table and shakes his ass in Vince McMahon's face. That was something.
The ass is masculine, pal.
Twerking wasn't a thing in 1997, but Shawn Michaels damn near invented it right here. But, hey, how many times can you say, hey, I shook my ass in my boss's face?
And got away with it.
Yeah, and it was fine. He laughed it off. Ha ha, god dang it, pal. Good game. But anyway, that wraps up the show. I guess we're going to take our final break. When we come back, it's final ratings time. We'll tell you what's coming up in February here on the podcast.
Follow the Main Event Marks at facebook.com/MainEventMarksPod, on Twitter at @MainEvent_Marks, and on Instagram at @MainEvent_Marks and at @MainEventCollector.
What's up, everybody? I am the hardest part of the ring, the host of the Apron Bump Podcast. Ugh, another wrestling podcast. How many times can I listen to fans tell me who needs a push, who doesn't need a push, who brings Vince's coffee these days? Enough! The Apron Bump is about the journey. It's about nostalgia. It's about discovering new forms of wrestling to really tickle your pickle as a wrestling fan. The podcast brings you reviews of wrestling events all over the world, whether it's WWF, WWE, WCW, ECW. We even cover the golden eras of Ring of Honor, Progress, TNA, and more promotions in the future as well. New episodes every Wednesday. Bump day, huh? Yeah? Go to apronbump.com or go to your favorite podcast platform or YouTube and subscribe today for the most diverse, fan-friendly wrestling podcast in the world. I'm hard.
The Main Event Marks are available wherever you get podcasts and on YouTube. Find all of our links on our link tree at linktr.ee/MainEventMarks.
And we're back.
We're back.
Final ratings time. People didn't like this one as much as I did. Internet Movie Database gave it 6.6 out of 10. Cagematch.net only gave it 5.98 out of 10. I gave it 8 out of 10. I had fun watching this. What say you?
I had a lot of fun watching it. I said B+.
Yeah, it was cool. I not everything out of 1997 was like, oh my god, that show top to bottom so good. But I feel like a lot of fun shows came out of 1997. I enjoyed a lot of them,
especially on the channel.
Yeah, WCW had some bangers. WWF had some fun shows.
Banger after banger.
Yeah, it was a good time had by all. ECW was there, you know, so
ECW right. Already did that.
Yes, but that brings us to the end of the show, which means we should probably tell you now that we're wrapping up the first month of 2023, and you know that the calendar page turned, Greg, which means that it was a new life for everybody.
Yeah, everything's just great now. Everyone's out of debt.
Right. The gas.
Everybody that died is coming back.
Yeah, all the gas prices are low. People can afford everything now. Yeah, it's great.
Stupid mentality. Sorry, if you have the mentality, you're an idiot. Oh, can't wait for the year to be over. Oh, God, it really is different. What's different? In 2023, well, tell me right now, what's different than at the end of the year last year?
Well, I heard one person talk about that where they say, oh, you know, all the people, it's like, oh, new year, new me, whatever. And they're like, why do you have to wait until January 1st to start? It's like, just like people with like weight loss or whatever. It's like,
My gym is all set filled.
Yep. Yeah, it's like if you're,
I go every damn day. People all of a sudden come up. January 1st is like your day all of a sudden.
Right. It's like if you have to wait until January 1st to start something that you know you need to do, then you don't take it that seriously.
Unless for some really crazy reason you don't get the money until January 1st.
Yeah, something like that makes sense. The other thing would be like, I guess a diet. You know, if you're waiting until after the holidays, you know, whatever. Because I'm sorry, during Thanksgiving and Christmas, I'm not really watching too much what I eat. But between the holidays, I guess I tried a little bit. But either way, what we are watching is in February. February 1st, we are going back to the NWA in 1990. It's Wrestle War 1990, Wild Thing. That's a really weird name for the show. But Ric Flair is in the main event, defending the NWA title against Lex Luger. Also, the Road Warriors are taking on the Skyscrapers in a Chicago street fight. Should be fun. February 8th.
I love when they always do that. Wherever they are, they got to put that title in the front of the street fight.
Now, what makes this different as a Chicago street fight rather than, say, a Puerto Rico street fight? That's what I want to know.
Do you remember in WCW when they had, like they always had those evening gown matches? One time they just happened to be in New York, so they called it a New York evening gown match. Because, you know, New York evening gowns are far different than any other evening gowns.
Oh, yeah, right. The only one I thought was kind of clever was the ROTC match. It stood for Rip Off the Camouflage. Like, okay. Well,
that's one of my all-time favorite matches right there.
Of course. I will say, kind of clever. Perverted, but clever. February 8th, speaking of ECW,
that just tells me that idiot sees initials and always thinks about nudity.
Well, of course. Bro, nudity. Also, abuse, bro.
Bro, abuse them while they're nude, bro.
Get them naked, beat them down, bro.
He would.
But,
I love you being funny. That sounds like something he would say.
Of course. We're going 24 years back in the past for our February 8th show. It's ECW's Crossing the Line.
Way back
in 99. This one, I picked it because at least part of the card looks good. The main event is Rob Van Dam defending the TV title against Jerry Lynn. And then we
can never
go
wrong with those two. It's impossible.
Yeah, even their matches that were okay are better than most matches. Also, we've got Super Crazy taking on Yoshihiro Tajiri on that card. They had one of the longest running, most memorable feuds in ECW. That just
frenemies.
Right. Like sometimes they were together, sometimes they were feuding off and on, and it seems like I don't think that feud ever ended. It just kept going in perpetuity. February 15th, though, we're going a little bit slightly more current. It's a WCW Super Brawl Dos in 1992. Lex Luger defends the WCW title against Sting. And Rick Rude defends the U.S. title against Ricky Steamboat. This card looks pretty good, I will say. Looking forward to watching that. I actually like WCW 1992. I think 92 is a forgotten, really good year in wrestling for both companies. I don't know. That's also double main event week, which means the bonus show on the 17th is WWF Raw from February 5th, 2001. It's the last ever Raw from the Georgia Dome. The next time they were in there, wasn't it WrestleMania 27 they had in the Georgia Dome?
Oh, yeah, that was a classic.
Yeah. What a way to send it off, eh? It's like, before we destroy this thing, let's really destroy this thing. And then February 22nd, wrapping up the month, we're going back to TNA. It's our first TNA show of the month or the year. It's Against All Odds 2012. Bobby Roode defends the TNA title against Bully Ray, Jeff Hardy, and James Storm. Plus, this is the show where in the opening match, Jesse Sorensen gets a pretty damn scary injury. That
the most routine, basic move too. That you've seen a million times.
Yeah. Didn't he take like a when? When,
there was a moose off to the outside, and he tried to catch him.
Yeah,
that's what happened.
Yeah, I think his like knee came like tomahawk down on top of his head.
Yeah, it's a freak accident, man.
Yeah, it's brutal. It sucked, man. Not only was it a worry that he'd never wrestle again, but there for a while, nobody knew if he would ever walk again. It was brutal. But Either way, that is February. Looking forward to it. Thank you for joining me today, Greg.
Yep.
We will see you all next week with WrestleWar 1990.